Welcome to Federal Insights, sponsored by Salesforce. Here's today's moderator, Tom Temin.
The government is mainly an enterprise of people. It has elements of retail, wholesale, and manufacturing, but mainly it's a human enterprise. That's why it's crucial for performance that agencies provide top-notch employee experience. It's one of the best routes to customer experience. For how to maintain good employee experience, I spoke with Roland Edwards, the Chief Human Capital Officer at the Homeland Security Department. Employee experience, which in some ways is good in its own right, but also because a lot of people believe that's how you're going to get better customer constituent experience, is if employees like what they're doing. So how would you describe the state of experience as referring to federal employees at this point?
Yeah, no, and I really appreciate the opportunity to be able to share. So thank you for that opportunity. I think it's inconsistent, right? But it's inconsistent, but improving every day. So we have a number of initiatives and programs that we were working on before the pandemic started. But the pandemic gave us a lot of lessons learned that we have really moved the human capital community. We've moved our customer experience and quite frankly, understanding what our employees need and want and to be able to support them. So it's moved tremendously in a very short amount of time. And so we're continuing to learn and evolve. And so I'm excited. And I think across the federal government, whether it's the PMA or the President's Management Agenda or the President's Management Council, you know, we receive good guidance from them. And our leadership is very involved and actively pursuing continuing to improve the employee experience.
Because for DHS, you have this huge diversity of missions. There are people outdoors, there are people in the skies above, there are people on sea and so on, plus thousands and thousands of people in airports, in regular offices. So how do you think about employee experience with such a wide range of missions and individual employee situations?
Yeah, and again, just a great set of questions that you have. So our employees are not just there, but they're in very remote locations. They're also around the world. And so that does create this whole challenge of interconnectedness and just making sure that, you know, all of our employees continue to stay connected to the mission. And I think that we're doing a great job of that. So number one, our employees who are on board truly feel that the mission is first, and they do everything they can to support the mission. Our frontline occupations have continued to work throughout what has been a very difficult and challenging time for all Americans, right? And so continuing to do their jobs admirably on the front lines throughout what it's arguably one of the most difficult periods in American history has just been amazing to watch and see and continue to support. But, you know, we have a really strong employee and family wellness program where we really want to take care of not just the employee, but it also extends to their family as well, because we know that employees experience life outside of work, and they bring that with them to work. And so we have to be able to support the whole employee to be able to get the most out of our employees.
And how do you support the whole employee?
That's a really great question. So, you know, a lot of the programs that we have, whether it's and, you know, oftentimes we need to destigmatize the EAP, our employee assistance programs. So let's just start there, right? So it's not this program that you go to when you have a problem, or, you know, it's this program that's there to support life. So whether it's financial assistance, or whether it's tax time and you need a webinar, or you're sending your kid off to college, right, and you just need one of those kits that helps you understand what to do, planning a wedding. You know, it's this program that really just supports wherever you are in life. So that's kind of a baseline offering. But beyond that, you know, across, quite frankly, the United States, we continue to see whether it's suicides are up, whether it's drug use is up. You know, how do we also replicate those types of programs that are supportive of our employees that we understand also are things that are happening just in life in general?
And that is a program, the EAP and some of the other wellness programs. I know your predecessor launched a lot of programs when people were suddenly online and you had that situation of isolation, you might say, for those that had been in an office. But what about at the individual unit level, at the individual bureau or office? It seems like this should be in some ways the responsibility of local managers, local executives that may not have the agency-wide or the department-wide view, but they have their view of what's going on locally.
One of the biggest things that my direct boss, who is the acting undersecretary for management, Tex Alice, he'll tell you all the time that it's leadership, right? Leadership is important. And so we're really doing our best to put programs in place that support our leaders down to the local level, to your point, because it's not just the programs that are involved, but it's the employees' ability to actually participate in those programs. It's how in the on the ground, are they being supportive? Are they recognizing things and challenges that are happening with their employees? And not all programs that are national are local, right? Because there are some things that you actually need to be able to tailor to your local community and the things that, that you're dealing with that are very unique challenges, whether it's geographically based, whether it's just something that's just happening within your work unit. So you've had a suicide recently, and you really need to apply those resources internally to make sure you're taking care of your staff.
And what about the news? Because when you think of, say, Customs and Border Patrol agents or TSA officers and people that are FEMA, for that matter, people that everybody has an opinion, and you see these opinions all over the place on cable television. Is there any way to help employees have the tools to just deal with the atmosphere while, as you say, they really just want to concentrate on the job they were sworn to do?
I think that the atmosphere, in particular in the last several years, has been really charged. And I think that that is something that we have continued to look at. Our secretary has been very upfront and out front, quite frankly, with making sure that we're telling our story. Because I think that that's one of the biggest things. Our employees need to understand that our leadership understands what they do, that we appreciate what they do every day. And we have to be able to tell that story so that the American public also understands what we do and that they have a greater appreciation for the care that our employees actually go about their daily work.
All right. What are some of the other elements of making that connection between employees and employer in the DHS context?
So, as, again, I appreciate the questions. As we continue to think about our employees and how we actually connect them to the mission, a number of things. Number one, our employees want to get out and tell their story, and they want the opportunities to be able to do that. So we try to make sure that there are those opportunities to create the policies and the space for them to be able to get out in the communities locally and tell their story, whether it's through a volunteer opportunity or otherwise. That's one of the biggest ways that they continue to build the interconnectedness and be able to tell the story, tell the DHS story. And quite frankly, that also leads into allowing us to do better recruitment efforts so that people understand what we do. When we do that, it helps with our connectedness, right? Internally within DHS, we have employee associations that we promote and other things that the secretary is working on in terms of programming that allows whether it's SES cadre to get together so that we can share our stories, looking at best practices, lifting those up across the department. It's really about being able to create those opportunities to share, create those opportunities to provide feedback, and then actually show action against those suggestions.
And these employee associations then are distinguished from, say, the bargaining unit or the union that they're signed up for, but it's more sounds like a community of interest.
That's 100% correct. And so those could be across DHS, but or they could just be within the component itself as well. So absolutely.
Because I imagine, say, in that sense, a TSA officer may have a lot in common with a Border Patrol officer simply because they're dealing with people that may not want to be dealt with in the way they need to be dealt with sometimes. And you distill out the particular mission, there's some functions that are very much in common.
Absolutely. So when you're thinking about the, whether it's a law enforcement community of practice or interest, but, again, you have those affinity groups. And as we look at inclusive diversity as well, one of the things that we want to do is to make sure that all of our employees that come on board feel like they can join DHS and feel like they are not just hired, but that they are included and that their viewpoints actually matter and that they're making a difference to drive the mission forward.
And I wanted to ask you briefly about something you mentioned, and that is recruitment. And, the federal process can be difficult. In fact, I know a senior executive such as yourself who recently switched departments, and it took this person from, I think, back in February to all the way to September before he could actually just do the same function, a notch up maybe, from one department to another. So someone coming in from the outside, it must seem almost incomprehensible how you get into government. How can you mitigate that, and how do you, such that when people do arrive there, it's not like they've been through a slog, but they're glad to arrive.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it. So, you know, oftentimes getting that first federal job can seem like it is this arcane art form to get into the federal government. We have a whole team that's dedicated to demystifying the federal process, whether it's on the Office of Personnel Management's website, where they are really trying to post some guides for individuals who are coming in. But also we do webinars, because sometimes you just don't want to go find something that's static content. But you want to be able to participate in a webinar and ask questions and get them answered to help you understand. So we do resume building workshops, et cetera, so that people actually understand the hiring process, and it allows them the opportunity to then apply and apply on an even footing.
And when you do hire someone these days, what is the onboarding process for someone who prior to COVID would have just presumed to have come into the office?
Yeah, so it's that whole connected piece that you kind of open with, right? And so how do we make sure that new employees who are coming on board, that they continue to feel this connectedness when they're coming in? And it's connected not just to the mission, but it's connected to a group of people that they know that they can call on, that they can rely on, that they can ask questions, so that they feel like they are now a part of the organization. So our entire onboarding process was revamped at the start of COVID. You know, where we went from everyone who came into the office, you come into a room, you're there for, you know, a good couple of days, you just run through a slog of paperwork, and then you go to your go to your division. And so now we really need to rethink that and think about how not only do we have them come in and do the core things that they need to do, but then how do we give you that the ethics of being a federal employee? How do we introduce you to your work unit and the missions of DHS? So that you have that broader connectedness. And in particular, when you talk about folks who are doing kind of the mission support functions, it's very easy to get disconnected as opposed to the folks who are on the front line and they see in action every day how what they do matters. And so it's that balancing act of making sure that everybody feels connected to the overall mission of the organization.
Roland Edwards, Chief Human Capital Officer at the Homeland Security Department. We'll return with more of the interview after this short break. I'm Tom Temin.
Salesforce is the number one CRM, bringing the public sector and customers together in the digital age. The Salesforce Customer 360 for Public Sector is an integrated platform for public services that brings mission-critical capabilities to life, enabling relationship management, case management, team collaboration, integration, analytics and business intelligence, engagement and outreach, and modern application development, both within Salesforce and for third parties. For more information, please visit salesforce.com/government.
Welcome back to our interview with Roland Edwards, Chief Human Capital Officer at the Homeland Security Department. Our topic is how to provide good employee experience. And how are you dealing these days with telework versus in the office? Because this has become such a difficult issue for employees, for management, for OPM, for pretty much everybody looking at this. What's the DHS strategy these days?
Right. So first of all, our leadership early on opened the aperture to be able to allow for the full range of the flexibilities that the Office of Personnel Management offers. And so that's how we were able to really continue to meet our mission throughout the course of the pandemic. We have not gone all the way to the other side where we've gone back to the pre-pandemic ways, right? We learned a lot during the pandemic. We learned that we can actually get our jobs done and actually do them better. We've learned that it creates a greater work-life balance for our employees to allow the flexibilities. So whether it's remote work, whether it's being able to be more of a remote worker but in the local commuting area, or whether it's to be able to use telework where you're still coming in part of the time because your job may require you to have an in-person presence. So there's that piece of it, which is the work schedule based on the work itself. But then there's also tied to that the piece of, you know, once you actually are in that work unit, how do you still stay connected like you were asking before? And so we've learned how to do this virtually. We have tools and technology that fortunately and it really enables us to do that. And it's continuing to make the most of that and being creative in how we do it.
Yeah, I wanted to ask about that technology piece because, again, early on in the pandemic, everybody rushed. We got to buy laptops, give everybody a laptop, give them a Zoom account or a Teams account, whatever the case may be. Now there has been some maturing, I think, in what it is that agencies perceive they need to provide as tools for employees in this hybrid world. What's happening on that front, and do you work with your OCIO and so on to make sure that what is needed now gets distributed to the people that need it?
Yeah, and so I think that that's one of the areas where DHS was out ahead. Our CIO shop really it moved us towards having the laptops and being ready because telework, we were already in a telework environment prior to the pandemic. I think that one of the things that we've had to now continue to think about is what are those at-home use policies and how do we empower our employees to be as effective as possible while they are working from home? And what's that balance of having those tools in place at home as opposed to those tools in place in the workplace? And so we kind of think about the workplace and we're re-engineering what our workplaces look like, right? Because this all blends into what does the future of work look like? And quite frankly, the future of work is now, right? And we need to be doing a lot now that we're going to continue to evolve and plan for towards the future, but making sure that our policies and procedures allow us to do that in a very nimble way.
Right. So collaboration then can take place in the office if people want to come together for a specific purpose, but can it also take place when they are also remote? Or is that's what Zoom is for?
Absolutely. And I think across the federal community, we're looking at what does that look like, right? So because we are hiring remote, we're hiring across, across the country. And so does that mean that in order for you to collaborate that everybody has to come to, let's just say your home base is D.C., that everybody needs to come to D.C.? Not necessarily. You may have a core group of folks who are located in Seattle, for instance. You know, maybe that team gets together in Seattle and they Zoom in together and you do some of these kind of interconnected things regionally. And then you also kind of begin to blend those so that you also are looking across regions. So, again, our folks have been super creative throughout the pandemic. In order to make sure that that connectedness in place.
What are some of the techniques you're using to keep the pulse on employees? You mentioned that there is a suggestion process and people need to understand that those are read and thought about, if not necessarily acted on, if it's not practical. But are there ways to make sure that the temperature of the workforce is known to management? The Chico office needs to know it, but really it's the line managers that have to worry about it the most.
I'm super excited about some of the programs that we have in place. Again, we have a very engaged senior leadership team. So our secretary and our deputy secretary often go out and have these conversations in the regions. And so they don't bring people here. They go out to people. And so there are a lot of topics that come up during those sessions. We have a focus group sessions that we've been leading from the human capital side. Again, generates quite a few ideas, and we bring those back and we act upon those. Quite frankly, when we're in the field and we hear something that we can resolve immediately, we work to resolve it immediately because there's no need for it to just come back and then churn. If we can share that with local leadership and then they're able to immediately act upon it. And that's what makes a difference for employees, right? It's that they know that we saw it and they know that we moved out on it. And then there's some just larger issues that we've got to be able to go communicate back to them. Hey, this is a larger issue. This is something that we're working, but we just have to let you know this is not something that we're going to be able to resolve by tomorrow.
And DHS, gets dinged every year when the federal best places to work rankings come out. But of course, that breaks down into individual units and bureaus. And it's a much more fine-grained approach than you might see on the average. How do you use those scores and do you feed the individual location scores back to the people that are responsible for it and try to build up that score over time?
I appreciate that. So literally the tool that OPM provides to agencies allows us to get down to the most granular level possible so that those individual work units actually get their scores and then they can provide meaningful action plans that move the scores for those individual work units. So we do have an employee engagement steering committee that looks across DHS to figure out how we're moving forward as an agency, making sure those action plans are in place. But again, the actions really need to occur for the most part at that local level, because as you mentioned before, leadership is so important and so critical in making sure that happens. They know what really is needed in those locations.
And just to pull on the technology thread one more time, as the human capital function leader in DHS, are you confident that the tools are in place technologically, bandwidth-wise and all of these other measures, that whatever it is that you want for employees can be effectuated with the technology that's in place?
So I think it's one of those areas where across DHS, our CXOs, our C-suite, so the Chief Human Capital Officer, the Chief Information Officer, et cetera, we work really collaboratively together. And I think that's where the power comes in on this one. So if there are challenges that I'm seeing that I think bleed over into our CIO space where I don't believe maybe some of our teams have the tools that they need, they are super proactive. They are constantly working with the components to make sure that, that employees have what they need. And as we see the future of work coming, that's one of those areas where that collaboration is so critical and important that we continue to be able to build that in. Because, as you know, this is not cheap, right? And so we've got a pretty extensive budgeting process, and where we can see things down the road and be able to plan for them appropriately, that really helps us to make sure that we're building that capability in so that our employees continue to stay supported throughout.
And while we have you, tell us about your own story. You are now the Chief Human Capital Officer for DHS. You succeeded someone who is well known in that position, who has retired, moved on to other things. How did you get to where you are, and what motivates you to keep in this function, which can be difficult in the federal setting?
So let me just share with you, I had the opportunity to work as Angie Bailey's deputy, and I will continue to just give shout outs to Angie, and I appreciate the fact that she did not throw me away when she went off into the wild blue yonder of retirement, and she continues to be a mentor for me. So I will tell you, one of the challenges is very difficult following in the footsteps of a living legend, right? And so there are a lot that we were able to build together, and looking at her vision and continuing to build on that I'm just grateful for the opportunity. In terms of what motivates me is, quite frankly, there's this huge opportunity right now to really advance the federal workforce and to really share with the workforce that not only do we care about the mission, but we care about each and every individual. And we really do want to try to make every federal job a good job. And I know that sounds cliche, but that is a part of the president's management agenda. And I care about that. And I care to make sure that that is what we do. So we have a lot of frontline missions. They have very hard jobs, and we appreciate what they do. And we have to work to make sure that all Americans understand what they do and appreciate the sacrifice that these individuals make and their families. So it drives me. Our mission drives me. Our people drive me.
Sounds like you're optimistic about where DHS is heading and into this new post-COVID world. Still difficult in many ways, budgetary, political, you name it. But sounds like you think things are looking pretty bright.
I am hugely optimistic. So Karen Ahuja at OPM, I'm just a big fan. So when you talk about, you know, having a fan club, I feel like I should be her like number one president for the fan club. What I see coming from the Office of Personnel Management and the resources that I see coming from OMB and the Hill to support the Office of Personnel Management, I am very encouraged. I am encouraged that the workforce is front and center in the president's management agenda. I'm also very encouraged that my leadership does not just give it lip service, but my leadership literally, not only have they looked at what the PMA is, but they've crafted their own goals based on their own experience having worked in DHS before. So I am super excited to be in this role and to be able to try to move some of that forward.
Roland Edwards, Chief Human Capital Officer at the Homeland Security Department. To hear this interview again or share it with colleagues, please visit federalnewsnetwork.com and search Insights. I'm Tom Temin.
Thank you for listening to Federal Insights, sponsored by Salesforce on Federal News Network.